Recording on Valentine's Day, that means we got to have a cool Mac Picks from Sam Levin. It's My Mac Podcast number 171.
The next generation of radio, it's the MyMac.com Podcast.
And as I said at the opening of the show, we're joined this week by Sam Levin. Hi, Sam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. It's Valentine's Day. That means we have to show much love to the Apple community. And what better way to do that than have Sam Levin on the show?
Thanks, guys.
I'm Tim Robertson. I'm the host of the MyMac.com podcast. Also joined from the UK is David Cohen. Hi, David.
Hi, how you doing?
I am doing well. How are you all the way over there?
Yeah, fine.
That good, huh?
Sounds really bad. That's all.
We are missing Guy Shura. We're not quite sure where Guy is. He might have left a message on my iPhone, but I tend not to keep that by the computer that I'm recording on because a lot of times you'll hear interference. I have heard that on other podcasts as well. It's a very distinct sound. Have you heard that, Sam? When the iPhone Edge network kind of interferes with other audio signals?
Yeah. Well, I turn it off when I'm on.
When you're on? Yeah. It also works if you turn it to the airline mode so it doesn't
join
any network. Yeah. But regardless, it kind of makes this weird, annoying sound. I can't stand it, but, it's just one of those things that I think eventually Apple or maybe AT&T will work out and you won't hear that interference. If it's even on their radar, I don't even know. So, Sam, cool Mac picks. It's Valentine's Day. Mm-hmm. It's going to be too late for anybody listening to this to go out there and buy a Valentine's gift. But if they listen to this and for next year, is there like this one massive, really cool product that people would say, hey, that's the bling right there. That's the Valentine's gift.
Yes. Yes. I know. Which I would love to have.
Either one.
Okay. All right. Well, there's several, but let's talk about iPhone bling because this segment, guys, I got the bling, and especially for Valentine's Day, let's talk about Vaha. Vaha is a company based in Buenos Aires. If you want to check them out, go to Vaha Cases. That's V-A-J-A, Vaha. That's Spanish for cow because everything is made of leather. All handcrafted iPhone cases, not only iPhone, but iPod, PDAs, cell phones, smartphones. These guys have been making beautiful handcrafted cases for many, many years. And I'm the lucky recipient of some of their iPhone cases. And today, I want to talk to you about the iVolution Silver. Now, if you go onto their site, you got to check this baby out. It's an iPhone case that's leather and silver. So the trim of the phone, of the iPhone case, is silver, and the button is silver. This is, I'm honest to God, real silver. So it's red, and it's called the iPhone, the iVolution Silver, and the starting price is $280. So it's just a beautiful, they make it in pink as well with silver trim, and they make a whole other line of cases for the iPhone that covers the screen. This one doesn't cover the screen. I actually like it that way so that you can immediately get access to your call or whatever you need to do on your iPhone. So it's just absolutely beautiful. It's like jewelry, the perfect jewelry accessory for an iPhone user.
How much does something like that cost?
It's $280.
Wow, that's quite expensive.
It is, but they do have other cases that are for the same exact case that is not silver. It's called the iVolution, and it's $80.
That's
and it's beautiful, and you can get it in several different combinations. They have a whole thing called Make It Custom Choice, and you click on it, and your front could be a different color than the back. You can have a clip or no clip. You can put your initials on it. It's a great company. They've just made quality stuff for many, many years. So check them out at vahacases.com.
Says over 1,000 possible combinations for the choice.
There's a lot of combinations. I've done a few over the last few years. Before I got to know them, I was buying cases for my Motorola StarTAC and my Palm PDA. Now it's iPhone, and they make iPod Touch cases as well. Every iPod they support. Anyway, it's a great company. And on that note, you guys, you got to check out a couple other companies, and one of them is called Tuneware. And Tuneware is based in Japan. They actually have a U.S. Subsidiary, finally. And I was able to get a hold of the folks, and they're in San Jose. And they've come up with a whole line of iPod and iPhone cases as well. And they've been doing iPod products for many years as well. One of the new cases is called the Ambassador Prie. That's P-R-I-E. It's called Prie. And it's all leather. It's got a clip on the end. It's very, very well made. And it's just a different type of a case than Baja. But it's I don't know, I wouldn't say heavy duty, but it's just built really well. And it's got an area in the back of the case to put a couple credit cards or a bus pass.
That'd be nice.
Well, they do this in Japan because everyone uses the transit system. So it makes a lot of sense that they have this kind of a thing. Here, people use transit, but not the same way. But it's nice. It's got a belt clip that's heavy duty. It's really well built. And the one that I'm holding is black with red piping, red stitching. So it's fitting for Valentine's Day, and it retails for $59.95, and they come in other colors. They make a gold version that's pretty cool, a silver version, not real silver, but it's gold leather. It's very nice, and then they make an iPod Touch version of it as well. And Tuneware is known in the industry for making really nice products. As I said, they're based out of Tokyo, and you can buy them today online at tuneware.com.
So and, of course, let me put this little quick plug in there, because I've actually been talking to them as well, Sam.
Good.
And they're actually going to give some product away on our podcast as a contest here in the near future. So
excellent.
You guys are going to definitely want to come back and listen to the podcast in the future. You're going to possibly be able to pick one of these cases up for free.
Excellent.
Ka-ching.
Excellent.
That's always a good thing.
So check out their site. They make everything, even hi-fi cases, even though Apple doesn't sell the hi-fi anymore. They make a beautiful leather case for that, and all the other iPods that have come out, they support every iPod and the iPhone on the planet. And then lastly, for the iPhone cases, since we're talking about it, a company called Casemate makes an entire line of iPhone and iPod cases, and I've got in front of me what they call a signature leather iPhone case, and it's in green. It's very, very well made. It's kind of similar to Baja's, but it's a little lighter, and it's form-fitting. So it's a hard leather case. It's a shell, and the iPhone fits right inside of it. You have unfettered access to the front and the side and the end of the iPhone, and it's not expensive. It's $34.99. So for people that don't want to spend a lot of money, this is the ticket. It comes in black. It comes in red, green, pink. They are shipping a brand new version, a carbon fiber version of this in the next few weeks, and they promised to send it to me. That's expensive. That's $89, but it's carbon fiber. So that'll be kind of interesting. And as an option, you can buy the belt clip for it in case you want to clip it on the side of your pants. But I like it without a clip because it's just easy to throw in your pocket. And I like their stuff. I've been using their stuff.
Well, they've been making stuff for the iPods for a long time now.
Long time.
In fact, I did a review of, an iPod Nano and an iPod case for them back in 2006.
Right.
So Casemate's been around for a while, so obviously they know what they're doing at this point.
Yeah, they do, and they have one of the ultimate iPhone cases. They have a diamond-encrusted iPhone case. It's diamonds and real gold. Honest to God, it's $20,000. I have not seen it. I doubt that I'll get a chance to see it, but
I would imagine that's probably built to order.
Probably. I would feel probably a sheikh or a sultan or someone from Saudi Arabia can afford it, but they also have a BlackBerry case. It too is $20,000, and it has 42 diamonds totaling 3.5 carats in 18-carat gold setting. So it's the ultimate iPhone case bling. But speaking of that, I do have one of the hottest bling accessories for the iPhone from a company I think everyone knows called Louis Vuitton. And everyone knows who Louis Vuitton is. They make purses. They make handbags for both men and women, luggage. They're a French company, and they happen to make a few different iPhone cases. I was the lucky recipient to receive a red alligator iPhone case. It's over the top. But here's what's
pretty awesome.
Yeah, well, let's just say if you're in the fashion side of things, you want one of these because, of course,
it's Louis Vuitton.
It's Louis Vuitton. That's the reason why you have it. It's not the reason you're not going to war with this thing. You're going on the on the runway or whatever. Someone like Paris Hilton
is using this. Yes,
probably. The case retails for $1,200.
Wow.
And they do have less expensive cases, but because it's alligator, it's expensive, and also the name Louis Vuitton. It doesn't have LV over it. It's just red alligator. You wouldn't know. Unless you know Louis Vuitton, you would not know what this is. So it's...
And this is an iPhone case.
It's iPhone. That's all it is. It's an iPhone case.
You buy this case, they might as well just give you a free iPhone.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm kind of into the fashion thing. I like it. I think it's fun. In the next couple of weeks, I'll be able to talk about Kate Spade and some of the other stuff. I hope Prada makes one as well. But, Prada makes their version of the iPhone, the LG phone that Prada markets. So who knows? Maybe they'll make a case for the iPhone as well.
I'm waiting for the Wrangler brand. That's kind of
right. I'm into that too.
The Levi.
I'm into that too. But the Louis Vuitton case is very cool. It's chic. If you're A, wealthy, and B, you are into fashion, then this is the case you want to buy your partner, your sweetheart, whoever, or the gift for the ultimate business person. So check that out at LouisVuitton.com. They sell them at other sites as well. And I've never seen this case in a Louis Vuitton store. I would bet in New York they have it, but and possibly San Francisco. But I was just in a Louis Vuitton store, and I didn't see any iPhone cases. So it's pretty exclusive.
So I understand that you're going to be upgrading your iPhone as well, Sam.
Yeah, actually, I just got the 16-gig iPhone.
Is this going to be an addition to your current iPhone, or are you going to replace the old one?
No, I'm going to replace. There's just no need to have two. Why do I need two phones?
I don't know. I just saw a report that something like 30% of all the people have multiple cell phones.
Enough cell phones, but it's on Sprint because I have a grandfathered plan that allows me unlimited access for data, for web, for unlimited calls 24/7. You can't get that with a phone plan today.
No, you
can't.
That's
what I have. It's $100 a month, and I get anything, all you can eat. So that's why I have the Sprint. So there's no reason to do that with the iPhone. It's great to have for other uses, particularly media and surfing the web. And so I'll let you guys know, what it's like. But it's the same phone. I have heard reports that the speaker is better.
That would be a nice welcome change because that's the one thing I don't like about the iPhone. The speaker is just
horrible,
especially for calls. It's horrible.
No, I know. It's just not loud enough. So I've heard they've increased that or improved that, and that would be great. Essentially, it's the same phone. It's the same specs. It's just 16 gig. And actually, that's a big deal for me because I carry around a lot of data. I have a huge music library, and I don't want to carry around an iPod. I have another iPod. I have an 80 gig, but why do I want to carry two different devices around?
Yeah, I'm kind of with you there. Yeah. I've got a 60 gig iPod fifth generation that I didn't think I would stop using just because I got the iPhone, but more and more it's becoming my, the phone that is becoming my iPod as well.
Right.
Yeah, now, I'm the same. And I mean, I've even got 3G Nano that I hardly ever take anywhere with me because I've always got the phone with me.
Yeah, it's like, well, I've already got the phone. And when you only got 8 or even 16 gigs, you're very selective on what you put on there.
Right.
So as far as music, you're usually only putting, you know, your 4 or 5 star plus music. You're not putting, you know, everything on there.
And actually, what I recommend for all of our MyMac listeners out there is create a playlist that's specific for the device, meaning call it iPhone. Call it – I have iPhone Jazz. I have iNano or something specifically, and then it's a lot easier to manage. Because I used to try to do this with multiple iPods. So, but what happens when you have a 60 and a 20? It doesn't work unless you start doing manual syncing. And no one's going to do manual syncing with over 5,000 tunes.
No, absolutely not.
So that's my recommendation for all of our, you MyMac listeners out there. It's a lot easier. You can just erase the playlist if you want down the road. But then you know. There is also a way to set it. That you can listen to a song and not repeat it. And I forgot how to do it. There's a smart way to do it, a smart playlist way. But
oh, yeah, all you have to do is make a smart playlist, and if right. the play count is over one,
right.
then you don't include it.
It doesn't include yeah. it. Chris Breen actually has that in his book, and it's great. Chris is excellent how he documents all this stuff.
The only thing that I miss not using my iPod 60 gig is it's got all my music, obviously, on there. And most of the podcasts I listen to, but not everything. But what I would do is I always made a playlist with that was called Unrated. And it was every song that was in my iTunes library that I haven't rated yet.
Right.
And I would listen to that occasionally so I can just go – I'd start listening to a song and I'd give it a quick rating and then click next. And that way the next time I sync the iPod back up with iTunes, those songs are now rated.
Right. Yeah.
But I can't do that with the – iPhone because there's just not enough room.
All right, there's only two things I wanted to talk about, and then I'll get out of your hair because I know you guys have a lot of gossip to talk about. this is follow-up from Macworld still because a lot of things came out from Macworld Expo that just last week I received, and one of them actually wasn't from Macworld Expo, but the first one is from the company called George. Actually, the product is called George. It's called Chestnut Hill, and I know it's so weird. Their website's called Chill Sound, so if you go to chillsound.com, you'll see the product called George, and I'm sure you guys know what this is. It's an iPod home entertainment system, and what's really, really unique about it is that they've incorporated the remote into the body of the speaker system. So it's a dock, it's a speaker system, it supports video out, and the remote you can carry anywhere around the house and view the contents of the iPod. And this isn't just a standard remote. This is a remote that shows everything, your playlists, your artists.
Is it exactly duplicating iPod screen?
First of all, we have to back up. You cannot duplicate the iPod screen because Apple will not let you.
Won't allow it.
They won't allow it for reasons. I'm not going to get into it because we don't have time to do that. But they've done almost as much as they can do, but I'm giving them a lot more pointers on, hopefully, for them to include things that they haven't. But it's a very nice system. If someone doesn't have speakers, stereo, and they've got their iPod, this is an all-in-one system. You can carry around the remote. It's backlit LCD. It's not color yet, but still it's a decent remote. And you can access your entire library. There's assignable buttons. There's about 8 buttons. 4 of them are directly assigned for the iPod, so immediately you can click on artists, songs, playlists, and get access to those. You can hit shuffle from the remote if you want. It's a lithium-powered remote, And also, it plugs into a separate charger. They include a separate stand, so you can have it in a different side of the room and leave it charged.
Awesome.
It's a pretty cool device. Check them out. The product is called George, but you have to go to chillsound.com to really see what this is about. It's unique. It's $500. It's a well-built product, and you can actually change the grills and the sides as an option. You can put, dark wood panels on the sides and different colored grills on the front to your taste, depending on, the room that you're in.
And they're advertising that they are available at BestBuy.com and select Best Buy stores as well.
$4.99. I like the product. There's going to be a lot of changes, I think, that they're going to make it even better. It uses what's called Zigbee, which is a wireless system. So it's a Wi-Fi. It's a version of Wi-Fi, but they call it Zigbee. So check it out. I like it, and I think they're going to do very well, even though it's kind of expensive, but it's got everything for that price. You got to consider that. And then lastly, I'm a bag freak. I don't know if anyone knew that, but I'm into cases. I'm into bags. I'm into anything that you can carry your devices, including your MacBook and MacBook Pro and whatnot.
I was thinking bag lady, but that's something totally different.
Bag boy. So there's a company. The guy that used to be CEO of Timbuktu, his name is Mark Dwight. He left Timbuktu a little over a year ago and started a company called Rickshaw Bagworks. That's just how it's spelled, RickShaw, rickshawbagworks.com, or just Rickshaw Bags. That's the website. And he's taken what Timbuktu has done and kind of gone one step further in certain respects. The bag that I'm using right now, he has donated, about 1,500 of them to the TED conference. And what's unique about this bag, guys, it's a laptop messenger bag. It's a complete sustainable bag, meaning every part of the bag is built with 100% of post-waste consumer product. That means the cloth, the plastic, the metal, it's all recycled. So he's really thought about the environment and building a bag that really works, but thinking about the environment. And I think that's a big deal.
Absolutely.
Now, Timbuktu, I'm sure, has done some of that, but he's taken it to the next level. And we're going to talk to Timbuktu down the road as well, because they make cool stuff as well. And remember, this is where he got a lot of his ideas, but he's taken some of those and one-upped them as well. Check out their bags. I'm using – I don't know what you call this bag, because it's right before they went to production with it, but it's a laptop messenger bag that fits perfectly for the MacBook Pro 15-inch. I mean, it is absolutely beautiful. He has many different color designs, and the inside of the bag is really well made. I mean, different pockets for many different things. So check.
You can never have too many pockets in a laptop bag.
Right.
That's for sure.
And the product, I think it's going to be $159 or something like that for the bag.
That's reasonable.
It's well made. I recommend it for anyone using any type of laptop. Remember, this is not just a Mac bag. This is for anyone that has anything from a 15-inch laptop down. And he's going to make the bigger laptop bags as well for the 17-inch. I bet you he supports the MacBook Air as well. But that is kind of a nice little plug for Rickshaw as their coming out party at TED conference.
Well, before we let you go, Sam, I did want to ask you, and I thought about this the last time we had you on the show, but we didn't speak about it. What do you think about the MacBook Air? Is this something that Sam Levin's going to be picking up, or is it just not really for you?
I said that about the iPhone. I said, I'm on the fence. And of course, I was the first person in San Francisco to activate an iPhone. And I said that about, I'm serious. I said that about a lot of stuff. And I love the design. I think it's incredibly sexy and sleek. And if you're using this as a second device or second computer, I think it's absolutely perfect. If you are going to use this as your only computer, then it's not for me. But remember, I have five computers. It would fit well with what I do, but remember, it's still, you know, this isn't a speed demon. It's meant for people that are on the go, that are gone for maybe a couple days. You could travel a couple weeks with it.
Well, from what I've been hearing, anybody who actually owns one, the people that I'm hearing that, you know, has gone out and bought one,
right.
I haven't heard any negative comments about it. Everybody that has one loves it.
Right.
I would agree with that. Yeah. My brother's just gotten his and he's really happy with it.
Mm-hmm. Right. It's incredibly light and it's one of its hallmarks. As I said, the advantages outweigh the disadvantages, just like in any of the products that we use from Apple. That's not even a fair statement, really. It's a very cool product. I haven't really played around with it because at Macworld I was too busy. I went by and saw it and touched it, and that was it. I'm hearing that people are staying away from the solid state because it's not worth the extra.
$1,000.
It's $1,000, and also you don't get a hard drive as big, and that's my only gripe. Is I wish you could have a bigger hard drive. I think it's 80 gig.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Well, that's going to happen eventually, though.
I know.
The price will come down as well.
It will. Yes. And the one thing I like about it is it's just wicked thin. And MacBook Pro, if you load it up with the power adapter and everything else, it can get cumbersome if you're carrying a lot of other things on a trip. So I think, would I like to have one and use one? Yeah, I would. But right now, you know, I have a MacBook Pro. Once you have a MacBook Pro,
why?
It's the best laptop in the world.
Yeah, that's kind of my contention. I've got the first generation MacBook Pro, the 2 gigahertz. And I still, there's no reason for me to upgrade.
There isn't.
I mean, the newer ones are a little bit faster, but not significantly so. Right. And the MacBook Air, for me, is just too small.
Right. I want to try the Air out in any respect, just for traveling, you know, for 2 days to a week and see. You know, of course, I'll have to carry the adapter that lets you plug into Ethernet because there is no built-in Ethernet. You have to use a USB to Ethernet adapter.
Yeah.
Of course, I'll have to carry one of the things for the airline plugs with me. That's okay. That's fine. I'll do all that. Everyone's going to copy them. I heard Lenovo is coming out with their version of the MacBook Air. So I already saw a sneak peek of it on the web, and everyone will mimic just like Apple did with AirPort, just like Apple did with the iPod. They'll all imitate, and that will be actually good.
But none of them run the Mac OS, which makes all the difference.
Right? No, and that's okay because people say, well, it's not a Mac. So just like an iPod, there's a lot of things that are MP3 players, but they're not iPods. So. I'm excited about it, and that's really it from Cool Mac Picks. So we have a bunch of different cases from Prié, Tuneware to Casemate. Who else?
Vaha. Louis Vuitton,
Vaha. God, enough to keep you busy. In the next couple weeks, I'll be getting a few more, and then I'll be able to touch base with you guys on other things, including Macintosh software. I just got Office 2008. We could talk about that in a couple weeks.
Sounds good. Well, we appreciate you coming on the show, Sam. And anybody wanting to find more about these products, go up to mymac.com, go to show 171, and Sam will email me the links to all these products, and we'll get them posted up on the site. Thanks,
Sam.
Guys.
Have a great weekend. Happy Valentine's Day.
Thanks.
Bye.
You too.
Thanks.
Bye.
Talking to a fairly recent switcher, and for many years you used a PC, is that correct?
Yes, it is.
And we're looking at your computer, which is one of the original MacBook Pro. What do you think of the Apple MacBook Pro, having used a Dell laptop for years?
I think for the things that I do artistically and, you know, there's just no comparison.
Do you wish you had done it earlier, or do you think the time was just right a year and a half ago or whenever it was you started?
I think the time is right. I was ready for it. Before then, I don't think I was. Wasn't doing that much digital and didn't really see the need for it, but when I got it, I did.
What are the primary creative applications that you use on your MacBook Pro?
I think iPhoto is probably the number one, and Photo Magico program that does slideshows.
The one from Germany.
Yes.
Boinks Photo Magico.
Mm-hmm.
And do you need to involve iTunes in this? Is there audio also as part of the slideshow?
Yes, iTunes is a critical part of it.
So when you do one of your creative slideshows, you use iPhoto to organize the pictures, iTunes to organize the sound, and then Boinks Photo Magico to put it all together to make it into a multimedia slideshow. Is that correct?
That's right.
And how long are your slideshows?
Very long.
Hours long?
Well, as someone once said to me, if 50 pictures is good, 100 is even better.
And 300 is good, 400 is even better.
Even better. The ones that are probably best are about 15 minutes, 16 minutes. And some of them run as long as about 32, 33.
So how many pictures are we talking about? Like a minute per picture?
Oh, no. We very short time for a picture. Sometimes as little as 2 seconds.
Oh my goodness.
But, mm-hmm.
So you might have 300 pictures in a 15 or 16 minute show?
Right.
And how many audio tracks? Just one song repeated over and over again?
No, many songs. Usually probably about 10 or 12 songs for that many slides.
Do you play the whole song from beginning to end and let one song run into the other?
Sometimes, if that's what it calls for. But many times I'll just take parts of the songs and use parts, the beginning, or usually more likely the end of a song instead. And so it's just part of it.
Do you need any fancy software to chop off the beginning or the end of that song?
No. I can do it through it's through iTunes, I think, isn't it?
Okay, yeah. So you're still just using those three creative applications.
Right.
More than you're using Audacity or Audio Hijack Pro or Photoshop Elements 4.
Right.
It's mostly just those two Apple and one third-party application.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Now, has this computer been flawless to you? Have you had any problems with it?
Yes, I've had many problems with the computer.
And why are you still using it? I mean, did they ever replace it or did they offer to replace it?
No, because my understanding is there have to be three major repairs to the computer before they'll replace it. What I've learned is I've taken it in a number of times. There is something wrong with it from the beginning. And I've taken it in a number of times to have them correct it. And they've tweaked it and done a few little things and tried things with it. What I found is that when you go in, if you have a problem with your computer, the thing you need to do is to ask them to note it. They have to make a notation of it in their program.
Mm-hmm.
So that they, every time you come in, it's been documented by them that what the problem is.
Like at a car dealer, they've got a whole list of complaints going back to your first flat
tire. So that they can put it together and figure out what the problem is, and also so that you don't have to keep going back and saying it's just not working or there's something wrong but I don't know what it is. They can make notations of it every time you go in.
Where are you taking it? To an Apple retail store?
Yes.
Is it the same retail store every single time, or have you taken it into several
I've taken it into two different ones. I was in another state, and I had a problem with it there and took it in, and they made the first notation, actually. And I'd already taken it into the store in the town that I live in several times before that.
And can they tell when they're in one location about something that's happened in another location?
Absolutely.
So there's a universal record.
Yes.
That's tied to you and that computer.
Yes. When I had this other store look into it, they said, oh, yes, we see a notation from another state. Mm-hmm.
Now, is the computer perfectly fixed now?
No.
Why not?
They're still working on it. We've had one major repair with three parts, and now they've ordered, I think, about 7 or 8 more parts and are going to try it again. It's too hot right now.
You mean it's too hot where you live?
That too. It's part of it is to the touch. It's hot, and it's causing a lot of problems.
So the computer's not so hot, but it's way too hot.
It's way too hot. That's
very good. And do you have confidence that they'll be able to repair it, or are you waiting until the third major repair when you can take this thing and smash it over the hand of the tech person?
Well, I'm trying to look at it in a very positive vein. And my outlook on this is that eventually it will work properly, or I will have a new computer. So it's just going to be down the line. I'm into the second major repair. And if there's one more major repair after that, then they will give me a new computer.
Have they made that clear? That's their policy?
I think that's their policy. I think they'll wiggle around as best they can to try to do, you know, what they can to fix this one.
Do you feel overall that even though your computer has been less than perfect from the beginning, that you've had the best possible service and support? Anybody could have had a defective computer.
Right.
And you've used it more. I mean, it's given you good service.
I think they could have handled themselves a little differently. I think they could have done a better job of customer service.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think about the new plan of splitting off the one-on-one training from the ProCare technical help?
I'm not quite sure what their reason was for doing it, but I think they probably had to. I think it was a wonderful deal for $100 to get 52 lessons and whatever technical support you needed. So, and sometimes the issue, you know, very separate issues to go in for a technical lesson and to go into, you know, to learn something.
I see.
So I think it was probably worth their, I think they needed it financially is my guess, but I think it's fair. It's definitely fair.
On a year over year basis, since you've had your computer a year and a half, more or less now, roughly how many of your 52 weekly lessons do you take advantage of?
Not as many as I should. I probably have been in maybe 20 times.
You've got your money's worth of the lessons easily.
Sure.
How long have you had the ProCare portion of it? In other words, just the technical part as opposed to the one-on-one training?
I think that they just started this program, I think, in January.
So this is brand new.
It's brand new where they separated it.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But I've been in probably, I don't know how many times with the technical part, because that's part of the issue I've had with the computer not working.
Well, do they have understanding? Do they have any understanding of the inconvenience to you of having to go down there, leave the thing there, not having the computer available during that time? Then you've got to go back there, pick it up, and you're not sure if it's going to work again, you know, 2 months later?
No. I think what they say is the party line. They say, we understand. Mm-hmm. When I've said to them, this is inconvenient, and I've spent a tremendous number of hours not being able to use the computer because the keyboard locks up, and, you know, especially when I travel, and a few other issues with it, and, of course, taking it into the Apple store, the time and spending time there and so on, it's been very inconvenient. And when I talk about that part of it, they just look at me with, you know, very puppy dog eyes and say, well, we understand.
Mm-hmm. But so they can't take a personal position on that.
No.
Now, in other things of your life, such as maybe perhaps building a house or getting a car or other things in your life, have you had other serious consumer-type problems where you've had to have something be fixed over and over again with perhaps a different resolution, a television or a phone or something? Are there other analogous situations if you step back from the annoyance of the computer?
I think it's probably the same in any arena. I do. I think that we have so many technical things now and so many moving parts and moving pieces to so many things. And that combined with the human factor, just makes it it just is going to take a while until you're satisfied. And I think it's put on the consumer to do the legwork and to be patient, with everybody for them to do their job.
Did the people at Apple make you feel like you were respected and like your complaints were legitimate?
Some of the time.
Not always.
No, not always.
But looking at it right now, having been an Apple user of some great success and some criticism over the last year and a half, would you recommend Apple as a computer company and recommend a MacBook Pro to somebody who's considering doing the sort of creative work that you do?
I think if you're going to do this kind of creative work, I think you're really stuck. I think you have to use an Apple. I think if I were not doing this kind of creative work and didn't have to have an Apple for that, I think I would switch.
Okay. So, but only because of the...
of the problem.
Not because of the computer platform or the software.
No.
It's strictly because of your specific problem.
Right.
And if we lined up 20 people and 19 of them hadn't had that particular type of problem, they may have had a software problem or whatever, the responses would be different, and perhaps you could have been one of those 19 in another group of 20 computers.
Yes, yes.
So some
of it... And also, I'm not saying that if I had a different kind of computer, I wouldn't have had the same issue with them.
Yes.
And have it be more difficult because you're not necessarily going into a store that just carries Dell computers or a different kind of computer. So it might even have been a worse experience if it had happened with a different computer. I don't know.
But overall,
overall,
if we're looking upon you as a switcher from Dell to Apple, would you say people should consider that if they're on the fence and they're thinking about going over to Apple to do creative work? What's your overall recommendation?
I would still recommend that they do it. And just, again, like with everything else you do in life, just have a lot of patience.
Very good. Thank you for switching to Apple, and thank you for contributing to the MyMac.com podcast. We wish you all the best with your computer repair, and hopefully it'll be the last one forever.
Okay, thanks, John.
Bye.
Bye.
Who's on speaker?
And we're back here, and Guy Searle's joining us. Hi, Guy.
Another Pleasant Valley Sunday. Yes, hello.
Actually, Guy was with us almost the entire time we had Sam on. He jumped in about, I don't know, 2-3 minutes after we started the show, but you just didn't get a word in edgewise there, Guy.
No, it was like, but too late.
So, of course, we appreciate Sam Levin coming on the show.
Oh, big time.
Love the Cool Mac picks. There's always something out there that you just don't know about, and Sam seems to really have the pulse on what's going on in so many different categories when it comes to Apple products, so it's great to talk to him.
Yeah, I don't even have an iPhone, and I want that $20,000 iPhone case.
So I want to start off, I know everybody wants to hear about 10.5.2, and we'll get to that in a minute, but I wanted to start off with a blog post from David Cohen about Yassoft, and why don't you fill us in, why don't you bring us up to date on this, and it's about Mac Heist as well.
That's right. Yeah, this is interesting. And I had a personal interest in this because I am a Mac Heist customer. What happened is, we talked a couple of weeks ago about Mac Heist, and we talked to Freeverse and got their view on whether they thought it was a good thing for them to participate in. One of the things that people were very worried about with Mac Heist was whether the pieces of software that were in the bundle were actually full versions of the software, whether they were cut down, whether they were limited license. And in fact, Leo Laporte and his guys on MacBreak Weekly specifically asked the Mac Heist promoters about that when they had them on to interview, and they were reassured, yes, the software you buy through Mac Heist is exactly the same as if you buy it from the developer's website. What happened this week is Yassoft, who makes Speed Download, which was into like a download management software. I've not seen it before. Actually, I quite like it. They released version 5 of their software. Version 4 was included in the Mac Heist bundle. They released version 5, and they said, well, there's a paid upgrade. It's not a point release. It's a full upgrade from version 4 to version 5, so there'll be a fee for that, a license upgrade fee. They said anybody who'd bought the software from them in the period from the beginning of the year to February 12th would be entitled to that upgrade for free. But they said that anybody who bought it through Mac Heist during that same period wouldn't be entitled to that free upgrade.
Ouch.
So as you might imagine, there was plenty of people, you know, and Mac Heist only finished about 3 weeks ago. So within 3 weeks,
yeah,
they've
then...
It
wasn't that long ago.
Yeah, exactly. They've then launched a new piece of software.
So Yassoft obviously knew, even before the Mac Heist started, that they're going to have this product coming out, and they're going to release. At least to me, it sounds like they coincided the release of this to right after the Mac Heist.
It could appear that way. It's difficult. It's difficult to be certain. Anyway, I contacted them directly before I posted on the blog side about it, because I thought it was only fair to give them an opportunity to respond. As you might imagine, the Mac Heist promoters are pretty upset.
Mm-hmm.
If you look through the forums posts on the Mac Heist website, there's some pretty direct and fairly fruity language from them about how they feel about this, because Mac Heist's view is that they expected this upgrade to be offered to their users for free, just the same as if you bought it direct, and they believe that Yassoft have not been straight up with Mac Heist about it. So anyway, I spoke to a guy called Mark Forrester, who's the PR guy at Yassoft, about it, and you know, it's all there in the blog post. His response is that, you know, they did not agree with Mac Heist that they would provide anything other than updates to version 4 for free. That's his view, and he believes that Mac Heist have slightly, via some sloppy wording, slightly misrepresented what was included in the bundle. He also says that there was no link between the promotional marketing aspect of them going to Mac Heist and the release schedule for version 5. I'm only reporting what he's said, you can only speculate about how they're structured internally. As a result of in an attempt to slightly quell some of the people who are upset about this, they have offered to to they have offered the upgrade fee for Mac OS users at reduced cost. It's $15.
Well, David, let me ask you something. You had bought version 4 directly from them, what was the upgrade cost?
I think it's $15, $20 maybe. I worked it out that if I'd bought the software from them directly at $25, and then say I bought that on the 3rd of January, say, direct from that $25, I would have got a free upgrade to version 5.
Oh, so it was a free upgrade if you're an existing 4 user, if you bought it from Yasoft. It was free to upgrade to 5?
No, it's not free. I'm on their website right now, and they've got Speed Download 4 regular license to Speed Download 5, $15 per user license. So they're not charging, you know, any more money to the Mac Heist license owners for the upgrade.
That's right. What they have now offered is for Mac Heist users, they've offered them 2 licenses for the price of 1. So if you're a Mac Heist customer and you pay your $15, you'll get a license for 2 machines rather than 1. They do have sort of license checking in the software, so if you do try and run it on 2 machines without 2 licenses, it doesn't work.
So it sounds to me like Yasoft is really bent over backwards to accommodate the Mac Heist customers at this point.
I think they've responded to the criticism. Basically what I said in my post is I think there's been fault on both sides. I think it was naive of them not to expect this sort of reaction from Mac Heist customers. And we're talking about a lot of people. I mean, you know, Mac Heist sold, you know, 30,000, 40,000 at least, something like that. So, you know, while admittedly not all of those people may be using Speed Download because some people buy the bundle for different applications, you know, you're talking about a fair user base there. The timing of it let me be diplomatic. The timing of it is unfortunate, and I think, as I said, it's naive of them to not expect this sort of reaction. I think they have tried to offer a gesture of goodwill, and I think I would hope that both themselves and Mac Heist have taken away a lesson in that, you know, they need to be very careful about using words like update and upgrade to perfectly clearly demonstrate to users what exactly that means.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I think the problem is that Mac Heist assumed one thing, Yasoft assumes something else, and actually the reality is somewhere in the middle, and of course that disadvantaged customers because they don't get complete transparency. So, but ultimately my view is that, you know, if you look at the price of the bundle, $49, and you got 14 apps out of that. Right. So, you know, you're looking at $3.50 per application. So if you pay $3.50 for Speed Download and then you pay an extra $15 to get the latest version, you're still paying less than the $25 straight up license fee. So you've still received a discount. And of course they have committed that they're not withdrawn Speed Download 4. They'll say they'll continue to support it. And effectively they're running 2 versions. They're running version 4 and version 5. So you're not compelled to upgrade to the latest version. But, you know, I mean, I think there are lessons to be learned about, you know, everybody needs to understand that obviously developers go into these deals and, you know, they've got to then move on from that version later on. And if you haven't paid the full price, I think perhaps you can't always expect to get the same sort of service.
Do you think the developers out there, the smaller developers, and I'm going to assume that Yasoft is probably a smaller developer, do you think that they're starting to come to more of a maturity in the market now that the Mac's really starting to gain a lot more market share? Bundles like the Mac Heist is popularizing their software that in a way that may not have been there before. Do you think that this is kind of a wake-up call for the industry in general that, hey, you really need to pay attention?
I think they do. I think they need to approach these sorts of things with perhaps a little bit you know, more market savvy and professionalism than maybe some of them have done. It is good promotion for them. I've never heard of Speed Download before Mac Heist. And as I said, I actually really like the software. I use it pretty much every day now.
What's it do?
Basically, what it does is if anything you download, it captures the download link from your browser and downloads it directly in their software. It does seem to download stuff more quickly than if you go through the browser.
And it allows you to resume?
Yes, it does, and it also allows you to, you know, queue things for download during the night. It allows you to access Yeah, FTP sites, iDisk, all of that sort of thing, you can access through it. And again, all the transfers seem to work more quickly for me than they do through the native applications. So, I think it's a nice piece of software. And I hadn't heard of it before. So the promotional, they've got a customer from me who they wouldn't have had otherwise. Yeah. Well, so the benefit is very good, you know.
Have you looked at the new version to see what the differences were between 4 and 5?
I haven't looked at it yet. I was to be honest with you, I didn't want to look at it until because I'll need to uninstall version 4 to install version 5. So I'll probably do that on a different machine. Yeah, it's because it'll overwrite the existing version. There's been a lot of debate on the MacLice forums about how you might go back to the old version. One of the problems is a lot of people are just, they assumed that they were going to get this version 5 for free, so they downloaded it, installed it, and then tried their license key, and then it didn't work, of course.
Yeah.
So, it really is a lesson in sort of damage control and being, straight up and transparent to your customers. I think the people who are complaining, some of them are maybe being a little unfair and expecting a little bit too much. But I can understand why people feel misled. What's interesting now is the relationship between MacHeist and Yazsoft appears to have completely broken down. They're not really talking to each other except through blog posts, and that's not really good.
With everything that MacHeist has gone through recently, as far as being on the Twit network and a lot of developers coming out saying that they didn't like the MacHeist and this is why, and another one saying, hey, it's a huge benefit for us. This is probably the last thing that the MacHeist people wanted at this point, I would imagine.
Well, they're very aggressively defending their corner, and I have to say, just before the show, I went through most of the blog sites and saw what their comments were. Most people are pretty much laying the blame for this at Yazsoft Store and not MacHeist. Because they really believe that MacHeist were very clear that they expected all of these pieces of software to be the full versions, and Yazsoft appeared to have a different view, and so
it is the full version, but the problem was is that they're not going to be updating version 4 anymore because they just came out with this new one. I mean, it was not really honest of Yazsoft to at least not mention something. I don't know who knows what was said behind closed doors, but why wouldn't they have said something to MacHeist to say, okay, well, we're giving you version 4, but we're going to have version 5 come out very, very soon. And if I was part of the MacHeist crew and found out that, okay, well, you're going to put version 4 in, but version 5 is going to come out less than a month later, maybe we don't want your software.
Exactly. Well, but Ambrosia Software did exactly the same thing. They gave away, well, not giveaway, but they sold through the MacHeist some products that were end of life. But they were very straight up about that on their website.
Right.
So. I think that's what it is. I think everybody accepts that Yazsoft has the right to put whatever software they want, to come to whatever arrangement they want with MacHeist. But what's fallen down here is the transparency about what actually is going to happen in the future has not been there. Therefore, MacHeist haven't passed that on to their customers, and those customers are now feeling, some of them are feeling pretty bad that they, I've seen the term bait and switch used.
Yeah.
And that's how a lot of people are feeling about it.
The truth.
Yeah, well, that's certainly how it appears, and that's not a good... I ended the blog post by saying that this sort of argument about, he said, you said, whatever, it just really doesn't do the whole community much good at all, unfortunately.
So, Guy Searle, up on the MyMac.com website, you posted on the 11th... a full page of what is included in the 10.5.2 update to Leopard. So do you want to go over some of that real quick?
Just real, really briefly. Basically, there were some improvements and changes in stacks, airport connectivity-related issue fixes. There was more support for third-party routers for back to my Mac. And, the typical dashboard, Time Machine, Finder, Safari improvement and bug fixes and a couple of security updates. Now, the problem... Now, I didn't talk about this in the blog post. I've got quite a wide variety of computers here at the house. I've got this old G4 tower that I was able to get upgraded to a dual 1.4 courtesy of FastMac. I've got my G4933 iBook. I've got my kids are using a 1.8 gigahertz G5, and of course my Core 2 Duo iMac here. And I didn't really want to upgrade the kids' machine to 10.5 right after it came out, because I'd heard about all the problems that a lot of people were having with wireless connectivity. So I had waited. But then when 10.5.2 came out, I went ahead and bit the bullet, installed it, and of course wireless died immediately. So I ended up having to hook it up directly to the airport router downstairs and get all the downloads for it, and it was still crap. So what I ended up having to do, just to give my kids a working machine, because I'd done a full backup before I did any of this, was go ahead and wipe the drive, put 10.4 back on, and they're back up and running. But, you know, I mean, it's like, when is this going to get taken care of?
How'd your update go, David, or have you updated to
10.2? I updated the MacBook I'm talking to you now on just this evening. It went okay. I was a bit, something to warn the listeners about is that when you first reboot after it's installed, it takes a long time to reboot.
Long time.
And the other thing is, it's huge. I mean, it's, depending on your machine, it will be 150 or up to 300 megabyte download. The problem is, as you say, Guy, if you've got a whole load of machines, I don't really want to go around all of them and run auto update and have that download to each machine. I really want to be able to download the updater and circulate it via a USB drive or something.
Have you guys noticed when you do an update to 10.5 whatever, it did this with 10.5.1 and it did it with 10.5.2, and I've noticed that it's also doing it with some of the iLife applications that require a reboot. It will, the software update will download, blah, blah, blah. But it doesn't install, though. That's the thing. It says, this requires you to restart your Mac. Do you want to restart? You click OK. The entire screen goes blue, and you just get that installing the software.
Oh, yeah.
And then that's never happened before. That didn't happen in the Tiger.
Yeah, that's a Leopard thing. I think that's how they do it now.
I wonder why they went that route. I'm thinking that a lot of people were installing updates and stuff with so many applications open.
Right.
That it was causing problems.
Yeah.
So they're forcing, if it's something that's messing with the core of the OS that's going to require a reboot, they're dropping you into that screen so you can't do anything while this update is being applied.
That's right. Which, you know...
Well, you could do some bad things, like force it to turn off. But...
yeah, but you can always do bad things, Guy.
yeah. Yeah, oh, I know that intimately.
It's really odd. What happened with me, I with the MacBook Pro... Not a problem going to 10.5.2 with the iMac 2.8. Not a problem. But with the G5, dual 2.5 gigahertz G5, it updated and everything went fine except it rebooted twice. And on the second reboot, it hung. And, of course, this machine is in the basement. That's what I'm talking to you guys on right now. This is the podcast station now. that's what
podcast
I mean.
Podcast Central.
It actually crashed on the second reboot.
Ooh.
So when I came downstairs, of course, I hear the jetliner going, the whole thing's just blowing like crazy. Had to do a hard restart, and it still rebooted three times before it finally came up. And I've never seen that before on this G5. I've never had a problem with this G5, so that was kind of odd.
There's something about Leopard that, I mean, the G4s don't seem to have any problem with it. The Intel Core 2 Duos and the Mac Pros don't seem to have any problem with it. But there has been... just a ton of problems with G5 machines and Leopard.
Yeah, it's odd. I wonder what's going on with that.
I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, like I said, it's so bad. I mean, everybody's heard all the stories about, you know, people that had Vista that downgraded to XP. Well, that's kind of what I ended up having to do with my kids' machine, just so that they could stay online, was, you know, I tried to take it to Leopard. I had legitimate copies of Leopard. I bought the family pack. And... I ended up having to put it back onto Tiger.
Yeah, that's unfortunate. Now, have you guys heard about the upcoming Service Pack 1 for Vista?
I've
been hearing about it.
Yeah.
One of the new features is it takes now twice as long to copy to an external USB device under SP1 on Vista. So, in other words, it slowed it down by like 50% file copy.
I thought
no,
I
no,
thought
no, that's a feature.
No, that, I thought that was a problem with the current version of Vista, and SP1 actually fixes it.
No, from everything that I was reading, people are saying it's taking twice as long to copy to an external hard drive now using the pre-release SP1, which should drop any day now, from what I understand.
Well, that's not really good.
Look, more Mac converts coming.
I think the thing is,
welcome
to
the MyMac.com podcast.
Yeah,
there is this move. XP is being discontinued from sale in June of this year, and they've already pushed that forward from probably the end of last year because so many people wanted to stick with XP.
Right.
I think the difficulty they're going to find is that, you know, Vista is just an operating system most people don't really want. You know, they want to use XP because they see it to be more stable, more familiar, runs faster, and I think this is a real uphill struggle for Microsoft in that, you know, they have a product out there that people just aren't, they're ambivalent about it, they're just going, meh, what, you know, who cares? But yeah. Actually, there's a group of their customers who actually dislike it to the point they say, we prefer to stick with the old version, thanks very much.
And I think those people are probably, the squeaky wheel always gets the grease, and I think those people are probably making a lot more noise than the average user. I think the average user is probably just as happy with Vista as they ever were with XP, but those who are disenchanted with it are making a lot more noise than those who are not. And I can say, as a Vista owner, yep, I have Vista. It's on my iMac. I run it under Parallels. And I can tell you, I had a problem. I had to wipe my entire drive, and one of the things that Time Machine does not back up is my virtual machines. So I had to reinstall Parallels as well as Vista, XP, Linux, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And XP, no problem at all. Linux, well, you never have a problem with Linux. I mean, I don't keep anything on it anyway, so it's just download a new copy and reinstall Ubuntu.
Yeah.
But Ubuntu. Vista, Ubuntu. But Vista, for some reason, did not like me reinstalling it. And it said I had potentially a cracked or a stolen serial number.
That'll be the activation because you've already activated it before.
Yep. So I said, wait a minute here. And so I had to call an 800 number. I talked to a real nice Indian lady.
And, she lives in Kansas, by the way.
Yep. And quite honestly, though, she gave me this long, I think it was 32-digit number. I don't remember if it was this alphanumeric or what, but 32 digits, and I had to put this in, and then it activated it. And she never asked me any questions or anything. I just told her what the problem was. I said, hey, I just went to reinstall Vista on my computer, and it's not working. And it's at this point, it says, I have to call you. And she says, okay, give me your serial number, and I did. And she goes, okay, now type this number in and below that for the activation.
She had your name already, though, right? So that your name was probably associated with the serial number.
She never asked me my name on the phone. She
really?
Just asked for a serial number, yeah.
She just wanted to know whether you had a valid serial number. That was all.
With an OEM serial number from just calling up and saying...
that wouldn't happen with the OEM. The OEM doesn't have that type of activation built into it. It's only
the retail copies. Right.
It's only the resale copies of Vista that behave like that. Microsoft brought this in. They started to bring it in with XP, and they went to town with it on Vista and the latest versions of Office. And it's just kind of stupid, really.
Clunky.
And they
it
took
irritated
a lot of
me.
Yeah, they took a lot of heat last year when the actual the system actually went down, and so people couldn't actually activate new copies of their software because the system was down for about 4 days.
I actually needed to use it within an hour. I had to get something done.
Yeah,
I don't want to go into details on what, but I had to get into Vista or the Microsoft, and I ended up going through XP to get it done because of the Vista screw up. And then, of course, afterwards, when I had a little time, I went back and I, you know, reactivated the Vista.
Right.
It was a pretty painless process, but nonetheless, it makes you feel like a criminal. It's guilt before they presume that you're innocent. And it comes up with this warning saying, well, you could run it, but it's going to be limited functionality. And you're like, what?
I just want to get my data. Yeah, that's something that Service Pack 1 has removed, actually, the crippleware function. Because I think
Now it just won't work at all.
No, they basically, I mean, all the slowdown stuff, they've just basically taken out. What will happen with after Service Pack 1 is if it thinks you're running a cracked version or a pirated copy, it will just nag the hell out of you. But it won't actually turn things off, which is what it did before, because I think they realize that, you know, the only people, I mean, with all of these things, the only people they're actually inconveniencing are the legitimate users, because the people who want to pirate it are going to go and pirate BitTorrent an OEM copy, or they're going to get a DVD that's been burned, you know, in Singapore or Asia or China or somewhere like that, that is no problem whatsoever, or they're going to get a keygen, or you know, there are various different ways of overcoming these things. Right. And it's just like every form of DRM, the real people it kicks in the pants are the people who are actually legitimate, perfectly law-abiding, license-buying, paying customers of the software.
Do you think Apple has realized this, and that's why we, even up to this date and time, there is no serial number with the Mac OS?
No. I think Apple's business model is about selling hardware, and the software supports the hardware sales. So I think, you know, they're probably relatively relaxed about people, you know, breaching their license agreements, because they know that anytime they're doing that, they're doing it to buy more Apple hardware or to run more Apple hardware. So ultimately, it benefits Apple in the long run, even though you would never in a million years get anybody who works for the organization to admit to that view.
Right.
I mean, we've talked about this before with Photoshop. Before Photoshop merged with Macromedia, and I've heard this talked about on some of the media podcasts as well. Before Photoshop merged with Macromedia and really beefed up their activation schemes.
You mean Adobe?
Yes, sorry.
One's a company, one's a software.
That's right. Yeah, but you know what? It's late. And
yes, it is.
I know what I was talking about. Yeah, before Adobe Macromedia merged, Photoshop wasn't as – it was just a simple license number. And we all know that was traded fairly easily around the internet. But a lot of people have said that they learned Photoshop on a cracked copy, and then they went to use it full-time in their job, and they went and bought real copies of the software. And so it was actually benefiting Adobe in that they were getting more sales in the long run. Now they've gone to a much more onerous license scheme, and they're not going
to
have
to. You have to activate it online.
That's right.
Yeah, which kind of bothers me, because I think, well, what if I'm in a location where this is a machine in an office that's not connected to the internet at all, and there are some security issues about that's just the way it is. You can't be connected to the internet. What do you do in that point? Well, you can. There's a phone number you can call, but Adobe is starting to really crack down on piracy. But at the same time, like you said, David, the only people that's really hurting is a legitimate user like myself. I had to go through something very similar recently with an Adobe product, and that I had to reinstall it. And no, it wasn't even that. I launched and it said, I have to activate this. It's been too long. I can't use it. I had already activated it once, and I thought, well, that's odd. I've already activated this once, and I just clicked a button, and it took a second, and I was fine. But I thought, well, that was kind of a bug there, because I have activated this online. I've had the product for months and months and months. Adobe sent it to me, so obviously it's not cracked. But it had to go through that twice on the same machine, and that was on the MacBook Pro. So that was kind of irritating, and I thought, I don't know why it did that. I figured it was probably a bug, but nonetheless, if that would have failed, what would have happened? You know, would it have denied me use of the Adobe suite at that point? For me, I could have just gone on the iMac and used it right there, but it was still an inconvenience. And it was that fear of, crap, they just turned off my software, and for whatever reason, and this is a bug, what are they going to do for me?
That's right.
Let's jump up to what's going on at mymac.com right now. Tom Schmidt did a review of a whole bunch of Macaulay iPod nano cases. That was kind of interesting. He owned pictures. I didn't have to pull anything from the internet for those pictures, so that was kind of nice. Macaulay has a lot of nice iPod cases. David Weeks did a little article on Drive Savers about recovering data from an iPhone in case it gets, say, run over by a semi. they actually have a picture of this iPhone
that was
just crushed. Oh, that would crush me, I can tell you that. Is Drive Saver something that you would be interested in if you had a? To me, Drive Savers is a company designed for the lazy users who's not backing up anything.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot of people like that, I think.
Yeah, But do you think that Apple's Time Machine is going to hurt a company like Drive Savers, and that it's going to be so much easier to back up your data without even backing it up? You just plug in an external hard drive and boom.
I don't think so. I think part of the problem is and you know, it happens no matter how big the drives get. It just seems like the bigger the drives get, the more crap you put on it, the less people end up backing up all of their stuff.
What do you think about Apple releasing, say, an iMac that has two drives in it, two physical drives, or when we get to the point,
sacrilege,
solid state, that one of the drives you don't even access, it's just automatically set up for Time Machine backup.
Or for so like a RAID 0 or something like that?
No, not necessarily a RAID 0, but because it's literally a different hard drive.
I'd settle for it at all. I'd settle for an iMac that I could actually put bigger drives in.
Yeah, that would be nice.
I mean, ultimately, if Apple really wants to make sure every user backs up, they would have to do something like that. I guarantee you there are many thousands of Macs out there today running Leopard, and the every time the guy plugs a drive into it, it's popping up that Time Machine dialogue. You want to use the Time Machine, and there's just clicking cancel and forgetting about it.
Yeah.
You know what bothers me with Time Machine? I filled up my first Time Machine external hard drive.
And it didn't tell you.
It tells you. Within the first week or two. And what it does is it just goes back to the real old stuff and starts deleting that and continues on. So I repurposed a drive that was in the G5. I got a SATA external USB case, pulled one of the hard drives out of this G5, a 250, and plugged it into the iMac thinking, well, you know, this would just be my Time Machine Part 2 drive. And the problem is, it has to do a full backup to this drive as well. Instead of simply tagging anything that's different from one drive to the next, it literally has to start over. And that's a problem for me.
Yep. But I think this technology is fairly new. One thing we've seen from 10.5.2 is that they've worked very hard to answer some very specific criticisms people made of Leopard. So I'm sure as time goes on, you'll see that those sort of things will come along and will be incorporated.
That needs to happen soon, at least from my standpoint. I don't want to have to go out and buy a 1 terabyte drive simply so I won't run out of room within the next 6 months. Because I am constantly running out of room on that. I think it was a 300, maybe a 400 gig drive that I ran out of room. So when I plugged this 250 in, it immediately popped up and said, there's not enough room on this hard drive. And I'm like, oh, crap. So it's basically useless. It's just, at this point, a common USB external drive. I can't use it for the intended purpose. To tag on to the other drive, and it's just a continuation of it. It doesn't do that. And I really want it to. Until Time Machine does that, it's just not that great. And I can't believe that Apple can't address this very, very quickly.
I think the problem is that synchronization of data between two drives, when you actually go into Time Machine to try and recover stuff, might be quite difficult, because it would have to tie up – it has to tie up the two databases and present that as a common view, and you'd be accessing both of those databases over the same USB connection.
It wouldn't have to be two separate databases. It could be one database that just points to two different common drives. I've got applications going back to 1998 that's done that you can literally catalog what's on different drives, and it's just one database that it accesses.
Well, but where does it store that? Because if you've got two
just
drives...
one database. It's just one database program.
What if you lose that drive where the database is?
If you lose one drive and the database is on there, then you lose the whole of Time Machine. I think that's the problem.
Well, that goes without saying, though. I mean, that's going to be a problem.
Talking about having two different drives, though. So if you lose the drive that has the database, you've lost everything on both drives.
No, the database is on it would just simply copy the database over to the new drive as well.
It would have to do that, and
but it still wouldn't be using two databases. It would still just use one database.
The problem is the situation where if you lost one of those drives, if one of those drives failed, how would Time Machine deal with that, and how would it deal with the potential data loss? I think they've thought about that, and they've decided it's just much simpler to keep it all on one drive, and then if the drive goes down, then you've lost your Time Machine backup. They've obviously not wanted to deal with that, with resolving that particular problem. This is why, you know, in the server space, people do use RAID because it takes that level of management away. And that's why the Drobo device that I reviewed is very good for that, because it allows you to, in your situation, if you had a Drobo, you just pull one of your drives out and put a larger one in, and it would take care of it. So, I would imagine that in the future, as the price of drives comes down, you'll start seeing more RAID-like solutions within these devices with swappable drives, so you can actually deal with the fact that you need more data.
John Nemirovsky reviewed a 2.1 stereo tower. That thing is huge. Did you guys look at that picture? I mean, the iPod is tiny on that.
I used to sell Bang & Olufsen Hi-Fi kit. Hello?
Yeah, we still got you.
Barely.
Yeah. I used to sell Bang & Olufsen Hi-Fi kit when I was a student in my spare time in a hi-fi shop. And this review kit reminded me very much of some of the big, tall speakers they used to make, which were very expensive, much more expensive than this device is.
Klaus Wolf reviewed a printer for printing out. You can print right on a CD, which is really, really cool. That's something that I think a lot of people are going to be interested in. I just think the price to buy one of those units to actually print to your CD or DVD is still a little high, and not to mention the cost of ink itself.
And plus the cost of the media is very high.
A media? No, the media is nothing. I mean, you could buy a 25 blank DVDs for... $15 at this point.
Yeah, but this needs the CDs or DVDs that already have the paper or whatever it is you're going to print to on
it. They need a coating on, don't they, take the ink.
And they charge more for that.
They are a little bit more expensive. They're not massively more expensive, but they do cost a little bit more, and they're not quite as available as generic CDs and DVDs.
Right.
I've got a drive that does the
sketch.
The disk scribe where it light scribe where it actually burns into the surface of the DVD.
But isn't that a different type of disk that you need for that as
again,
well?
Yeah, it is, and it's quite slow as well. It takes about 25 minutes, half an hour to do a disk. It does
but
look
it
quite
looks
nice.
It's fabulous.
Yeah, it does. Not color, but it does look very nice.
Donnie did a Maxpiration again. That's number 107 Maxpiration Donnie's done. This is Printing Mystery Solved in iPhoto 8. I think a lot of people get a lot of benefit out of that. Russ Walkowicz did a review of a new ebook from our friends over at Tidbits, Take Control of Easy Backups in Leopard. The funny thing is, the day after I got Russ's review, I've got a review from David Weeks of exactly the same book.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So I'll post David's review in maybe next week sometimes as well. So they'll get.
Did they both give it the same
reviews.
Rating?
No, I think David gave it a 4.5 out of 5, and Russ gave it a 5 out of 5, or I might be flipping those around, but one of them gave it a 4.5, and the other one gave him a perfect 5, so... It's a good book regardless.
Yeah.
Yeah, Russ gave it a 4.5.
Yep. Rich Lefko did Adobe Photoshop CS3 book for digital photographers. And unlike most reviews, Rich actually took pictures and followed the lesson plans in the book. And those pictures are actually in his review. So that was kind of cool.
You could see
exactly what the book is talking about from the samples that Rich provides. And it's not samples that are in the book itself. These are Rich's own pictures. So I kind of like that. I mean, you can really get a good grasp of what the book is trying to teach you by what Rich displays in the pictures. And the last thing right below this podcast on the main site is my review of the iHome H24D Deluxe Table AM/FM iPod speaker system.
It just rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? It is what it is. It's a small little speaker. It looks weird because it looks like a regular bookshelf speaker, but laid on its side with an iPod dock in it. It's very retro. The sound quality is meh, you know. But you're not going to buy this $50 speaker for the sound quality. You're going to buy it for the convenience and more of the retro look. And I really like the retro look. And, I'm happy with it. It's something that's going to probably sit in the living room. So when I want to quickly play something for the kids, it's right there. It's very handy. And we got it from Dr. Bot. And we want to thank
Dr.
Bot.
Those are great guys.
It is. Check out drbot.com if you're interested in this iHome product. And they've got a lot of stuff up there, too. Anything up on the blog site other than the two that we've talked about? I know Owen Ruman did the Leopard Blue Screen of Death.
Yeah. But we kind of talked about that.
Yeah. You know what cracks me up is Owen did this, and my voice is kind of going because I'm starting to get really cold here. Owen did the blog post, Fault with iDisk, Apple suggests that he cancels his .Mac account.
And misspelled faults?
Yeah, well, that happens.
Faults.
You know, I'm going to correct that right now while we're talking. For some reason, not everything at the MyMac.com website is working correctly. I don't know why, but unfortunately, I'm not it's not even taking my own edits. So
editing blogs is painful.
Broken. And it's broken on the website. So eventually we're going to have to get that changed. And like I've said before, we've got a huge update coming to the MyMac.com website. It's not going to be called MyMac.com. I mean, it is. The address is not going to change, but it's going to be MyMac Magazine. We're going to put a new logo up there, slightly different layout to the main site. We're going to break out the podcast and then a lot of video stuff coming up in the future. So it's going to be more of a three pane. It's going to be the features, the blogs, and then multimedia. So,
cool.
Yeah, we're going to have a lot of new stuff up there. We are talking to some new advertisers. That's always exciting for me. I can actually pay some bills around this place. And hopefully we get a whole bunch of them and we can pay someone to come in and redesign the MyMac.com website. So if anybody out there is listening and they like to work dirt cheap, like, i.e., I don't know, free.
Free as in beer.
Yeah, and they know PHP and SQL and all them complicated web technologies that I really could care less about.
So you're not going to do this with iWeb then?
No, I don't think our site would work well with iWeb.
Okay, just checking.
So next week we're going to have America Online, cool. Providing they don't, you know, something comes up and they can't make it. But right now they are scheduled to be on next week. I'm really looking forward to talking to AOL, you guys.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm still, almost embarrassed to say it, but I'm still an AOL customer.
I was, AOL is one of those companies that people forget about. They forget that they're even out there, but AOL owns a lot of web properties, like the unofficial Apple weblog. That's owned by AOL. So AOL still has a huge presence on the internet, but not necessarily for AOL.com. And MyMac.com and MyMac Magazine got its start because of AOL, probably more to do with AOL than any other place on the internet at the time. When I started the magazine, that's where I got the most downloads. I think the first issue got like a couple hundred downloads, and that was almost all from America Online, and that was awesome. So there's always a part of me that really still has some
soft spot.
A soft spot. But we're running up on an hour and a half, and that's a little bit long for us. So we're going to end the show here. We'll see everyone next week. Darn it, Sam. Wasn't Sam. It's me that, I don't know when to end a show, I guess. But we want to thank John for his segment this week.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, David, for coming on. I know we're keeping you up a little late there in the UK.
Always a pleasure.
And Guy, keep safe on those snowy roads over there in the East Coast.
Yeah, it's so bad as compared to Michigan.
Yeah,
Virginia.
It's pretty bad here. So I'm going to wrap it up. I'm going to go spend the rest of Valentine's Day with my wife and kids, and everyone have a great week.
Thanks for downloading the MyMac.com podcast. You can subscribe to this podcast at our RSS feed at MyMac.com or by visiting the iTunes Music Store's podcast section. Please send all feedback to MyMacPodcast@gmail.com. And thanks for listening to the MyMac.com podcast.